All right, welcome to the Shame Tech Gold Street Show, where every entrepreneur, as well as C-level and above executive, can come and receive support. I'm your host, Shame Tech Goldston, LPC, and I do one thing and one thing only, and that's support entrepreneurs and C-level and above executives who are experiencing burnout. My particular goal is to help you to understand all of the facets that could help you to relieve yourself from burnout by simplifying them and the way that you handle and do business or your leadership team. And today we have a special guest that also can help us really understand the facet of what it takes to get our message, our content out. As we are all aware, the pandemic has caused us to pivot, modify, and change the way that we do business. And so with that, we absolutely need search engine optimization, SEO for short. And we need to understand what Google is meaning from us to get on the top of the page. And today I have a guest that's going to teach us all about that, Danielle Gagnon. She has the experience with her own podcast, as well as with her own blogs and et cetera. And she'll talk more to us about that. So her podcast is Content Cash Machine. You can pick that up on any podcast distribution platform. Her company name is Elevate Virtual Marketing. And I would like to ask you to go ahead and grab your coffee, go ahead and grab your tea, and just give us 25 to 30 minutes of your time to learn this specialty, this background about SEO or search engine optimization. Welcome, Danielle, to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. So one of your specialties you talk about is SEO since 2014. And when you discovered the power of blogging, you understood that I imagine you were going through a lot of challenges trying to figure out how to get your blog out there, how to get your content. And so you started your business in 2018 and been working ever since full time, starting in 2019. Now, this specialty, you call it the lover of all things content creation. And so after years of working as a journalist and being a marketing manager, from your own standpoint of your particular business, you've learned that your niche is to help females entrepreneurs grow their business organically and massively, as you talk about. I imagine that you don't leave the fellas out if necessary.
I don't leave them out if they come to me. I'm just not actively seeking them out usually.
So you understand the power of SEO and content marketing, and I also too. Share us a little bit more about your specialty and especially tell us about the process of trying to get your blog off the ground.
Yeah. So like you said, I started blogging back in 2014. And like a lot of people who start blogging, I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't necessarily have a good strategy. My mom was reading it, like my grandmother was reading it, and that was about it. And I, you know, tried a bunch of different marketing tactics. I was on Instagram, I was on Pinterest, and those helped a bit, but it still wasn't at the level that I really wanted to be at. And then everything kind of changed when I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I accidentally got one of my blog posts on the first page of Google. And I was suddenly getting tons and tons of traffic to this one specific post. And I quickly realized, okay, I've done something here. I'm getting lots of traffic from Google. I need to figure out how I did this and why this is happening. And I need to start doing this with all of my posts, with all of my content. And so that was really when I started, you know, researching SEO, digging into what it was, what it meant, how to do it on purpose. And from there, I was able to, you know, significantly grow my blog to the point where I was actually making money off of it. And I was also able to start using this skill in my 9-to-5. I was a marketing manager at the time, but SEO wasn't really part of my skill set prior to this. Okay. And so I was able to really like level up my 9-to-5 job. I actually ended up getting a new job where SEO was a major part of my actual 9-to-5 job. And so when I started my own business, it was sort of like a natural transition for me to start using those same skills to help other business owners as well.
Okay. Now, if we can simplify what you learned from that post that went Google viral, what were the, if you can name 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 simply, what did you learn that you did to do to get that up and running?
I think the biggest lesson I learned, like the number one thing that I learned, was just the power of understanding what people are searching for online already. So in SEO speak, we would call that keywords, right? When you head to Google and you type something into the search bar, you are typing in a keyword, a search term, a search query, whatever you want to call it. And for me as a blogger, I was, you know, trying to write really creatively and fun and show my personality. And so I was writing a lot of recipes. I had a food blog. I was naming my recipes things like Danielle's special chicken pasta, and nobody is searching for that, right? Nobody is typing that into Google. And so with this post, I had just called it what I thought was like a very boring name, which was Instant Pot Chicken Tikka Masala. But people were searching for that. And so that was like the biggest thing I realized, like, oh my gosh, of course, nobody's going to find Danielle's special chicken pasta on Google. Right. And so that sort of sent me down the path of learning more about how to actually do keyword research, how to actually figure out what people are searching for. And that's typically like the biggest thing that people need to understand and need to do when they're starting with SEO. Mm-hmm. I also, of course, you know, dove more into Google's algorithm, what Google is looking for in terms of content, in terms of how you write your content. And when it comes to that, I mean, it has changed over the years, but at the end of the day, Google is really looking for high quality content that truly serves the audience. If you're writing like a 400 word blog post that just sort of scratches the surface of whatever topic you're writing about, the chances of you showing up high in Google are pretty slim. And so really learning to focus on writing like really helpful, in-depth content that has those keywords people are searching for, that's answering the questions that people are searching for in Google. All of that was really sort of the foundation of the strategies I started using, and this still the strategies that I use today for my clients.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know for my personal experience, I'm very well versed with Google as well. Now, you made mention of something. Not only did you make mention of focusing on calling specific topics or words in your blog as they are, not putting a twist on it, you also talk about that you went to Google's algorithm to learn more about that. Now, where would a person go to start learning about the algorithm?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Google themselves actually share a decent amount of information about what they're looking for. But there's some, I mean, if you go to YouTube, if you go to Google and you just sort of type in SEO best practices or something like that, there's so many great resources out there. I learned a ton from someone named Neil Patel. He's one of the top SEO experts out there. He was sort of my go-to as I was learning all of these strategies, and I still learn so much from him today. So I always love to recommend him and his resources. But there's so much great content out there these days. But one of the things that I really like about Google, I feel like they're a lot less mysterious in some ways than like Facebook or Instagram with their algorithms. When they make a big change to their algorithm, they tell you, and they tell you like a year in advance. So it's really helpful to be able to get that content straight from the source and understand what they're really looking for. For example, Google just had a big algorithm change in this past month, which was June 2021. And, you know, they were very clear leading up to this point, we're going to pay a lot more attention to what they call page experience. So not just the words on the page, but also how easy is your website to use? How fast does it load? How well is it set up in terms of menus? Is it easy for people to navigate? All of those things. And they told us that a year and a half ago. So they're pretty transparent, which is certainly helpful.
Yeah, so that's what we call user friendly or user readability is kind of what Google talks about. So let's kind of, when you talk about your podcast content cache machine. Mm-hmm. What are some of the content or the topics that you are narrowing down for your audience?
So on the podcast, I do some solo episodes. I also talk to a lot of other content creators. So we've talked to people who are experts in YouTube, Instagram, all sorts of content that you might be creating. But at the end of the day, the primary message that I'm trying to share with people through the podcast and through, you know, all of the content that I create is that your content can actually help you make money. When you figure out what your audience is looking for, what they're already searching for in Google, and then create really high quality, helpful content that serves those needs, you can sell just about anything. You can sell services, you can sell products, you can sell digital products and courses. When you're able to show up for people in their time of need, and show your expertise and be really helpful, that is a really quick way to start building trust, and start, you know, showing that you are the expert, that you can help them. And so I've worked with so many different kinds of businesses on this stuff, and it can really be super powerful, both for like local based mom and pop kind of businesses, and e-commerce or online course creators as well. So I think that that's my main message, that you don't need to just be creating like reels for Instagram, which is fun, and can be great, but you can also be creating, you know, longer form content that legitimately makes you money.
So to dispel the myth, SEO is needed for any and every business. If you are selling lollipops, if you are an attorney, if you are a doctor, if you are a mental health facility, if you are a parking lot, SEO is necessary to get the word out about your business, right?
Yeah, now, absolutely.
Is it more about the amount of content that you put out there and the consistency? Does that have a key factor in how Google recognizes you and puts you on the first page along with the others?
Yeah, it's a little of both. It's a little bit of quantity and quality. I would say quality is the most important thing, but quantity and consistency does matter. Google does pay attention to how active a site is. If you have a website that you built in 2016 and you haven't touched it since, Google's going to be less likely to send traffic to you simply because there's no way for Google to know, like, are you still in business? Or is anybody taking care of this website? And at the end of the day, Google wants its users to find what they're looking for and to have a good experience. And so by creating content consistently, and that doesn't have to be weekly, it could be once a month, even every other month, potentially. I usually recommend at least once a month doing some sort of content creation for your site. Doing that consistently is just a way of signaling to Google, like, hey, I'm here, I'm creating content, I'm being helpful, I'm active, and all of that can definitely help boost your site in search rankings.
Yeah, you know, I'm creating a new site now, ShanteeGolson.com, and I am realizing that it's just not about putting something up there and ta-da, that's it. You know, it's all about storage, and it's about optimization of your images, and it's about user readability, some of the things that you were talking about, calling things what they are, putting a unique spin on them. So yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, understand that these are the key components. And if you learn this, then your website will go further. But the best thing about this is you don't have to do it yourself. You have, you know, marketing companies, SEO companies that can do it for you. And that's one of the things that Danielle does. So your particular, you've progressed from the last 20 years concerning marketing. How did you do that? How's marketing progressed you?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people know marketing has changed so much over the years. I mean, when I first started working in marketing, which, you know, wasn't even that long ago, we were still doing a lot of like print ads. And I think we were even looking at a billboard at one point with the company that I was working with. It was a lot of stuff that, yes, there was an audience. People would see it, but there was very little return on our investment. And even if there was, it was super hard to track, right? We sort of just had to do that little survey of like, how did you hear about us? And hope that people answered and told us so that we could figure out if our money was being well spent. And as time went on, as I changed jobs and technology advanced, you know, it just has gotten so much easier to figure out which of your marketing efforts are truly working. I think that's one of the biggest differences between, you know, marketing of even the earlier 2000s compared to now, is that you can clearly see what's working and what's not working when it comes to driving traffic or driving conversions and sales. And I think that's one of the things that I really love about SEO, but also about digital marketing in general, is that you don't have to sort of blindly invest time or money and hope that it's working out. You can put some effort into whether it's search engine optimization or digital advertising or social media, and then you can actually look at the numbers and see, is this working for me? Is this driving traffic, or am I putting tons of time into something that's not getting me any results? And I know obviously you talk about burnout a lot, and I think that's one of the biggest benefits of this. So many of us still, even though we can't track ROI, we still end up spending tons and tons and tons of time trying to do all of the things, trying to do email marketing, blogging, YouTubing, podcasting, social media, all of those things. And it's exhausting. And so if we're able to really see like what is actually getting us business and growing our business, we can really start to focus more on those things and let go of some of the stuff that's maybe not working.
Okay. So, you know, one thing that we were talking about is burnout, also content. One of the questions that I have for you when it comes to scheduling your day, what would be a best routine for someone who wants to give this a try, who wants to do better with their website, their blog, their et cetera? How do you manage creating the content, then executing it on the platforms, and then waiting on the results? What would be a logical, I guess, scheduling process that you can recommend?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think, you know, to some extent, it is sort of personal to how people work and sort of their own work style. But I can share what I like to do and what I think can be a good strategy for people. Personally, I like to spend some time at the start of like each quarter, basically coming up with a bunch of topic ideas. So figuring out what I'm going to be talking about, writing about, creating about. And I do that with keyword research. So I'll either just use Google at a super basic level and see, you know, what are people searching for related to, in my case, search engine optimization. A great way to do that is by using Google's People Also Ask feature. We've probably all seen that in search results. You type something in and then there's a little section that says People Also Ask, and it tells you what questions are people asking about this topic. Those questions make great blog post topic ideas. If it's showing up there, it means a lot of people are typing that question into Google. And questions in general make great blog post topics. You just answer the question and you're good to go. So I spend some time at the start of each quarter thinking about the topics that I want to create. That way I have, you know, a big list of ideas. So when I'm like in the zone to write, or if I'm not in the zone, if I have to sit down and get myself to write, I at least don't have to think of what to write in that moment. I can just get started on the writing process. For me, I know that I write best in the morning. So I plan out times that I'm actually going to be creating content are early in the mornings. It's going to be personal to each person of like when you can have that focused work time. But I like to do, you know, once a week or every other week, I'll set aside a chunk of a few hours in the morning, first thing in the day, to, you know, bust out a post or two. I recommend this to everyone, I then sit on it for a couple of days. I don't look at it. A couple of days later, I go back in and make my edits. I have found that having that separation from when you write to when you're editing and sort of finalizing and polishing a post is super key to really having like a fresh perspective, a fresh set of eyes. It's almost like asking a friend to read it and see, you know, getting that fresh perspective. And then from there, I like to post and I like to figure out how I'm going to repurpose my posts at the same time. Mm-hmm. I like to think about it when I'm creating, because I never want to see someone create a blog post and then it's only a blog post.
Right.
a blog post can become multiple social media posts. It could become an email newsletter. It could become a YouTube video, a reel, you know, all different kinds of things. So I like to map out exactly how I'm going to repurpose each of the pieces of content that I create at the time that I'm creating it. Even if I don't necessarily like create all of those extra pieces of content in the moment, to at least have that plan and know exactly what I'm going to do throughout the, you know, rest of the week or the rest of the month is super, super helpful. And my clients have found that to be really helpful as well in terms of making the most of their investment, whether that's investing money in someone to do this for them or investing their own time in doing the content creation for themselves.
So when you talk about business owners and the impact that SEO can play on their particular business, and I imagine their personal lives, how do you see it to be very valuable? Let me break that down. You may mention that sometimes business owners pay other people to do the things that we're describing, and then some do that on their own. And so I imagine that it's very valuable to have somebody else do it who has the expertise and can also help keep the energy of the business owner so they can focus on the main things. Mm-hmm. When they do this, what type of range of fees does a marketing company charge for the business owner to kind of take it off the plate?
It varies. So significantly. I feel like I think all industries see this in terms of, you know, pricing various. SEO is an industry where I have seen some of the broadest range of fees imaginable. It's kind of mind-blowing. You know, you see companies that say like $150 a month and we'll like get you on page one of Google. And then you'll see agencies that say like $15,000 a month, we'll get you on the first page of Google. I think somewhere in between there is much more reasonable. I know for me, I love working with small business owners. I work with a lot of solo entrepreneurs. So I make an effort to make my services more affordable. I'm not charging $15,000 a month. That'd be fun, but it's just not, it's just not realistic for my clients. And frankly, I don't think it's worth that much. I mean, I think SEO is super valuable, but that is just, for most businesses, that is just an extreme amount of money to even spend like in a year on one service, let alone a month. So you can absolutely find monthly retainers, you know, people to work with on a monthly basis that are charging more like $1,000 a month or, you know, something in that range. It does vary, but there's lots of options out there if you're going to invest your money in it. And then if you're going to invest your time, I mean, yes, it takes some time to learn the best practices and to learn the process and obviously to create content. But I really do think. It really just can have tremendous impacts on a business. I mean, I've had clients who, you know, were driving next to no sales or conversions on their services through their websites, were having to be on social media all the time because that was the only place they were getting new clients. And then when we're able to get them on the first page of Google, they're just like have consistent leads coming into their business. And they're able to, you know, stop doing some of the stuff that they don't love. They're able to really focus on their zone of genius, or they're able to maybe outsource some of the things like social media or something like that to a VA or to someone else on their team. And again, be able to have more of that time to really focus on working on their business instead of working in their business all the time.
Right. And when you're doing both, it is very exhausting. And that's one quick way to get to burnout in a couple of years. Now, one of the first things to do if you're interested in starting to use SEO is what?
That's a great question. So I tend to start like a couple steps before you might think. So I always tell people, you know, before you ever do keyword research, before you ever even start figuring out, you know, SEO best practices and learning those, you really need to make sure that you are super, super clear on who your ideal audience is, who you're trying to reach in the first place. And this is true for most marketing strategies, but it's super important for SEO because who a person is, what they care about, what their problems are, all of those things impact what they're going to be searching for when they head to Google. I like to talk about people being either symptom aware, problem aware, or solution aware. So as an example, let's say I had a client who was an organic lawn care company. Mm-hmm. So symptom aware, they might be searching for things like, why do I have so many weeds in my yard? They, you know, they're seeing the symptom. They have weeds in their yard.
Right.
Problem aware, they might be searching like, okay, I know I have a problem with weeds and I need to figure out how to kill them. So how do I kill weeds without pesticides? Because she's an organic yeah. company. Solution aware, they might literally be searching for organic lawn care companies in their area. And so understanding those different stages and what people are searching for at those different stages is really important to doing before you ever do anything else with SEO. You need to understand who your audience is and what they really need from you at all of those different stages. And then you can get into doing more focused keyword research using a keyword research tool, or even just going into Google using their predictive search feature to figure out, you know, what are people looking for when they head to Google.
Yeah, so the keyword tools, there are many out there. You can just Google keyword tools and you'll get a plethora. Some are free, some are paid. I think in your opinion, if they are green with SEO and understanding the process, should they go with the free or should they go with paid? I really have a mixed view on that, but what do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there are some good tools out there that are free. Pretty much all of the free tools out there have some limitations. The tool that I always like to recommend is called UberSuggest. It's from Neil Patel, who I was talking about earlier. They have a pretty robust free version, but the other thing about it is that it's probably the most affordable paid keyword research tool out there. They have a lifetime membership, so you pay one time, can pay $250 once and have it forever. So it's a pretty good value. And if you're going to be blogging consistently or, you know, creating content consistently, I do think there is value in investing in a keyword research tool. And the nice thing about pretty much any keyword research tool that you're going to use is when you start by typing in, you know, a word or phrase that you think people might be searching for, you're going to be able to see actual data. How many people are actually searching for this every month? How competitive is it? So how many other websites are trying to rank for the same keyword? How hard will it be for you to rank for that keyword? And all of that information is super helpful in helping you figure out what topics you want to be writing about, and also the actual words and phrases that you're going to use when you're writing your content.
And so the one that you just suggested is UberSuggest.
Yes.
Okay, and so that's the keyword tool that Danielle is recommending. When you talk about the free versions, I think you have to have a little bit more knowledge in how to interpret, because they have scores and they have values. And if you don't understand that you should be leaning towards 0 versus 100 or in between, that's how it becomes difficult. And you can select words that has no bearing on any type of Google search. And so again, that's why I say a little bit of both, but if you're first starting off, I suppose Danielle is saying, find a page where you can just learn the platform and you can have valuable information without the guessing game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you made mention of a Google tool. I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, so this is for people who are brand new, just starting out, don't want to invest in a keyword tool or can't invest in a keyword research tool right now. I actually like to recommend that people just go to Google. So we've all probably experienced this before. We start typing something into Google and Google gives us a drop-down menu of things that it thinks we're searching for. So this is called their predictive search tool or predictive search feature. All of the things that are in that drop-down, they're suggesting those searches because lots of other people have searched for them. Yes. So if you see something in that dropdown, there's a good chance that that could be a good phrase for you to use. And so I like to recommend this practice or activity called, my friend calls it keyword research alphabet soup. Yes. So let's say I start with search engine optimization is like my core phrase. So I would type search engine optimization, hit space, and then I'd hit the letter A and I'd see all of the things that come up for me. It might be audit, analyst, analysis, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Anything that I see that I think I could write about that, I jot it down. And you can do it for the entire alphabet. And by the end of that practice, you could have 50, 100, 200 potential keyword phrases that people are looking for that can help inform your content.
And that's what you want, because you want a vast list, as you may mention, starting each quarter. You want to curate a large list so you can have a lot of content that you can put out there. And then you can be creative with the content as well. But again, we don't want to put fancy with it, right? Because people are not. And I think that's the reason I'm making mention of that is because that's a good tip. Because a lot of people want to put their name, sparkles, this, because they want to be unique, and very much so, but that's just not how the facts work, right?
Yeah. And I think there's a balance there, because we all want to be unique. We all want to sort of show our personality and our voice in our content. And I think there's absolutely room to do both. I think the biggest thing to focus on, though, is those core keyword phrases that people are looking for. Don't change those. Don't add personality to those core phrases. You can absolutely write a blog post that has a little humor in it, or, you know, shows like your sassy personality, or like whatever sort of personality you want to show for your brand or for your business. You can do that while still maintaining those core phrases that people are looking for, and not changing those things. And also places like social media, Reels, TikTok, all of those places are also great places to get a little bit more creative, show more of that personality. And it tends to have less of an impact, or even a positive impact, on the algorithm in those places.
Right, right. And you can absolutely start searching for hashtags on Instagram, and, you know, it gives you a number of the people, 2 million, 3 million, 200. And that could be a thought to add to your content list.
Yeah.
And use it for that particular, maybe not use it on Google. Maybe you have to do a little bit more research to see if it's relevant to Google, but it certainly would be relevant to Instagram.
Yeah. And you can do it the opposite of way around too. Like when I'm talking about doing the keyword research alphabet soup, and you have this massive idea of content ideas, you don't have to only use those for a blog or for a podcast or for YouTube. You could absolutely use those ideas on social media too. Chances are, if people are looking for that content on Google, it's content that they would like to see on social media as well. So you can absolutely use your keyword research to inform all of the content that you create.
Okay. All right. So as we are winding down, what are some other basic SEO strategies that business owners can start working on right now? Now, before you answer that, I do want to go back, because I like to, for my audience to have clarity. When we're talking about repurposing, we also can go back and talk about the keywords. Now, we also have Google Trend, where you can do some keyword research. Just Google Trend and it'll pull up some tools. Google has a lot of tools. And if you play around with them long enough, you'll start to get an understanding what they're for. That's another. Now, when you said that you can look at people ask, the way to get to that, what are the 1, 2, 3s to get to people ask?
Yeah. So all you have to do is do a Google search. So people also ask is literally part, it's what Google calls a SERP, or a search engine result. Search engine result feature. So when you do a Google search for just about anything these days, whether it's how to do SEO or, how to find an organic lawn care company, there's going to be a section of the search results that says people also ask, and then it has a drop down of questions where you can hit the question and it shows you an answer from a website. And every time you hit the one of the drop downs to see an answer, Google shows you more questions. So in about 10 seconds, you could have a list of 20 questions that people are searching for about that topic. So that's a super fast way to get some really awesome ideas for blog posts or an FAQ page or social media posts, whatever sort of content you're looking to create. It's an awesome way to see what questions people are asking that you could answer. And it's really easy to get to. have that section in your search results.
Yeah, so it's midway down the page.
It varies where it is, but it's usually either like, it's usually at least like 3 or 4 results down the page. Sometimes it's closer to the bottom. It's going to depend on the term that you're typing in, but it's always on that first page of Google results.
Okay. And then also I find a good keyword research through queries, forums.
Yes.
So what are people asking? What are they talking about? You can take that and you can get that knowledge. So you really can find content anywhere. You just got to make sure that people are asking or talking about it.
Absolutely.
Not one or two people, right? So what are some other basic SEO strategies business owners can start working on right now?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always like to recommend is to do a little bit of spying on your competitors, we'll say, especially competitors who are maybe a little bit bigger than you. Because a lot of times they probably have a team of people that are like, you know, pumping out content for them. And that's actually one of the things I really like to do with Uber Suggest is they have some competitor research tools where you can put in another website's domain, so their website address, and you can see what keywords are they ranking for right now. Which of their content is most popular, performing best in search results. If it's performing well for them, chances are it will perform well for you too. And of course, you don't want to just copy everything that they're doing, but it can give you some good ideas of what's working well in search engines, what sort of topics are people who you want to be reaching looking for, and then you can put your own spin on it and your own expertise into the same topic. So that's one great thing that people can start doing. I think also working on getting your website out there in other ways. So obviously, you know, we've been talking primarily about creating content, but another big piece of SEO is what are called backlinks. So links to your website back from other sites. And Google basically views these as sort of a vote for your website. So if, you know, other websites are linking to yours, it signals to Google that you have helpful quality content, that people trust you, that they find you to be, you know, an expert or knowledgeable in your topic. And so this is another thing that people can start working on right away, even if you only have a little bit of content right now. It's something that you can be working on at the same time. So reaching out to other bloggers in your industry, or if you're a local-based business, reaching out to local media, getting your business listed in local directories, all of those things tie into your overall SEO strategy and can be really helpful, again, to just saying to Google, like, hey, I'm here and I'm doing helpful things and can really help start to get you up in the search rankings.
So in our last 2 minutes here, when it concerns backlink, is there a variable in its performance regarding the number of backlinks that you have?
Yeah, so it varies a little bit, and you're going to see different SEO experts say different things. At the end of the day, though, it's sort of like what I was talking about when it comes to how consistent do you need to be with your content, or what's more important, quality versus quantity. And it's a little of both. Quantity is great. Someone who has, you know, 1,000 backlinks is probably going to rank higher on average than someone who has 20 backlinks. But that being said, you want to focus on quality backlinks. You don't want backlinks from all sorts of like spammy directory sites and that's it, because Google's not really going to view that as trustworthy. It's not going to view that as an authority. And so you're better off starting by focusing on quality. So getting links from blogs within your industry, local media, credible local sources, if you're a local based business. Those, or even like podcast appearances are a great example. Typically someone's going to link to your site from their show notes. That's a great example of a really quality source of a backlink that kind of does double duty, because you're getting the link, but you're also getting the exposure of that person's audience. Guest blogging is another good example of that. You're able to show your expertise, borrow someone's audience, and typically get a link back to your site. So I typically recommend start on quality first. Even if it's slower going, it's going to have more of an impact as you work on it.
Okay. All right, well, Danielle, thank you so much for your words of wisdom. Where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, I hang out most often on Instagram. I'm at DanielleGagnon_SEO. And then, of course, my podcast, too, as you mentioned, The Content Cash Machine. You can find that on all the podcast places.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. And as we sign off, I want you to understand that if you learn strategies and understand if they are doable for your schedule or if they need to be delegated, that, too, can help you to maintain your energy level, because it's not so much about time management versus it is energy management. And so if you know what you're doing and if you're planning things in advance, then you can know who to delegate it to, which will ultimately maintain your energy. And so I hope this podcast was helpful for you today. I thank my guest, Danielle, for being here, and we're signing off. Make it a great day. Be productive, be wise, and we'll see you next Thursday. Signing off. Mm-hmm.